Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. My name's Stephanie Sison, here with Jerome Ossentowski. Welcome to this lovely Wednesday that's not raining at the moment, which is a nice little break for us. Today we have one of our favorite guests here, Michael Thompson, back again, this time to talk about season extension structures and greenhouses and what we can do with things like that and how we integrate them into our lives and gardens and farms and some fun, exciting projects that he's been working on lately with some schools and some other folks. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Just to get us started, we're all very lucky to have all of this rain this year, much different than this time last year. Really fun to see all of the wet weather, although maybe some of us are getting a little gray with the clouds and excited to see this sun today. Something that's, I think, is interesting about season extension structures is oftentimes people just think of them for the cold. And they can really do lots of other things, like they can provide shade, they can provide wind protection, they can provide a place that isn't so full of rain and swamped out where some of our plants can be growing, even if it's a thunderstorm outside and we can be working with our plants in that climate as well. So I think that's a really fun way to open up our idea of what season extension structures can be used for. What I'd love to just start with talking about the simplest season extension structure available. And I think that the high school used to help out the Basalt High School. They used to bend right. the pipes to
they
do low tunnels. Do they still offer that
yeah.
program? Okay, so what is a low tunnel or what is the pipe bending that those guys do over there?
They take a half inch aluminum conduit. Electrical conduit from the hardware store, and they have a pipe bender, and they bend up these hoops that are 4 feet wide and about 4 feet tall, and just plug them in the ground in a row, you know, one after the other, and you get, and then you put just a remay or fabric over them to protect them, give them a little more thermal at night. And you can add other layers. You can do remay and plastic and, you know, and even, you know, blankets on top if it's going to be a really cold one.
Yeah, and Elliot Coleman designed the conduit bender, and they sell it at Johnny's Seed.
Right.
So it's nice to, you can bend them all the right size and the right mm-hmm. shape so they look really nice and straight. And it's a fast job, and that's something that you can do in any garden, and mm-hmm. with the plastic or the remay and interchange, and most market farmers use some of that strategy as well.
In our greenhouse up at the Red Butte Ranch in Aspen, used those hoops. They bought them from the high school, and we designed their outside beds, their raised beds, specifically for those hoops. So they actually are starting all their lettuces and outdoor plants, you know, already, and everything's doing fine. So they just pull up the covers, open them during the day and close them at night. And the caretaker there will sometimes put water bottles, you know, big like milk jugs full of water.
For the thermal mass.
Just to add a little thermal mass when he's going to have a particularly cold night. And everything works. He ends up with a little jump on the summer. Because in Aspen, I think they might have between 2 and 3 months of frost-free weather. Mm-hmm. At the most, you know, and in Basalt, we're getting between 3 and 4. And so that's just a big help for them.
Well, you used those beds up at Red Butte when you were managing the greenhouse there. How mm-hmm. did you find there were lots of different crops you were growing in succession with those hoops, right?
Sure. And I use them in almost any client's garden or recommend them, especially for folks who have raised beds. They mm-hmm. just are so easy to plug in and make such a big difference. And then again, I use them for cold. But also I use them for lettuce beds in the middle of the summer. If I needed a little shade, I would just fold up that remay and give it midday shade, and it would mm-hmm. stop the lettuce from bolting. So the little pipes, they cost practically nothing, and they really allow us to grow in some diverse and wild climates that help to stabilize that. I really found them useful. Mm-hmm. So what would be the next step up from that if a home gardener or a grower is like, okay, this is not enough. I have to grow more. I have to grow longer.
And you can use those rows on the ground. They don't have to be in a raised bed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, in my garden, I've got all the seeds that planted themselves or that I planted last fall growing now, the mustard and the garlic and the onions and spring onions and lettuces. And a chipmunk arrived a few days ago in my yard and checked it all out and ate one of my little emerging lettuce plants. So it's time to cover them up and, you know, keep the chipmunk out and the cat outside monitoring the garden, which he's too lazy to do, but you know, you do what you can. But yeah, you can do any kind of cover over them. I do my tomato plants that way. I'll put them in a row with little support structures ready for them to go, and then I'll just use the support structures to put a remay or several layers on if I see a cold night coming along, and put a couple bottles of warmish water out there, and that usually does a job.
When you made an interesting comment that I've used those hoops before too, and out of sustainable settings, we'll use them and cover them with chicken wire because some of our chickens are just really great at getting into the garden. No matter how many times you throw them out, they find a new way in. And so new young plants, we can kind of just protect them with some chicken wire temporarily while they're growing and getting established.
Right. Yeah, to notice that even without the remay, if you use perennial vegetables in your garden or on the ends of your garden beds or in a forest garden like I have, so we're already harvesting and selling nettles and spring garlic and what's the other one that tastes like celery?
Lovage.
Lovage, yeah. So we've been eating that in soups, and my lovage is already 3 feet tall. And the nettles, we've harvested 3 pounds and taken them to Barclay yesterday and a bunch of other. Spring garlic is another one that volunteers in my garden. So now you can actually dig that up in the big clumps and wash it and use it in soups or in salads or on the grill. And so that's also in the restaurants, they like that spring garlic. And it's a new way to thin out your garlic weed. And so if you do perennial vegetables, horseradish in amongst your forest garden or on the beds, you can get without any remay.
Right, you can get a really early harvest. There's a great book called Perennial Vegetables, which has a list of like 100 different perennial vegetables.
By Eric Tonesmeyer, right?
By Eric Tonesmeyer.
Yeah, I have his perennial broccoli. And so you can go beyond just, there's so many different ones. And I have a lamb's quarters coming up. I'll have a sea of lamb's quarters. So those are all things you don't even really need a row cover for, but that the row covers will just keep giving you a lot more opportunities.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And then to take it up to the next level, like out at Sustainable Settings, we have the high tunnels, which, different from a low tunnel, is just bigger. Bigger, sometimes they're bent pipe as well. I have a caterpillar tunnel, but then lots of different shapes and sizes, but big enough to go into. Lots of our listeners have seen these spaces, and we're full on here in Carbondale with, you know, spinach that's 2 feet tall and lemon balm that's giant and tomatoes in the ground and all of those kinds of things. So how much more do we get from a space like that, like a high tunnel?
Oh, gosh. Well, a high tunnel, you can do a tunnel within a tunnel, right? So you can have a high tunnel and you can put a row cover inside of it and get these delta T jumps. So let's say if you're in March and or February and it's, you know, 10 degrees outside at night, and inside the greenhouse it might be 15 degrees higher than that. So you might be up at 25, still freezing. But then if you have a row cover, you're another 5 or 10 degrees warmer inside there. And we're doing something at the Glenwood Springs Elementary School. Might as well announce we're building there in partnership with the school and some community people, a 18-foot by 32-foot Rimmel educational high tunnel.
Awesome.
And that's going in this summer. And it's not going to have a subterranean climate battery because it's going on a piece of ground that's fill, a lot of rocky, sandy, clay material. And instead we're doing raised beds inside, and each raised bed, there's three, one against the north wall, one island in the middle, and one against the south wall. And all three of those beds are going to have covers or curtains to isolate them from the rest of the greenhouse at night. And then each raised bed is going to have a small climate battery in it, so that you'll open them, open the curtains during the day, the climate battery will come on, charge the soil with heat and humidity, close the curtain at night, and the climate battery will only circulate the air inside that curtain with the battery, with the soil. So your heat will last a lot longer that way. And so we're going to use that method instead of the subterranean battery. And we've got some wonderful coordinations going on. A professor at CMC is bringing his summer class, doing technical work to design the control system. So instead of using, you know, industry standard controls, we'll let a college sustainability studies program design a control system using some of these new Z-Wave and other electronics that they can kind of tinker toy their controls through. And I've given them the parameters, and they're off designing that. So we'll be putting that in August. It'll be exciting.
Excellent. That is exciting. And how do folks learn more about that project if they are, maybe they are at the Glenwood School and want to get involved?
Let's see. We are going to have some way of communicating with people. I don't know if it's on the website there. We have a group of parents that are, and other community members and teachers that are spreading word. It's only going to be through email so far, but I suppose we'll be able to get something on the school website, or RE1 website. We'll try. But essentially, we're going to build the grading and the foundation will go in June. The greenhouse will arrive in early July, and we'll build it with a group of volunteers. And then in August, we'll put in the beds, climate batteries, and the curtains, and the controls. We have a little work to do up ahead. We have to bring water in and electricity, so that we can run it through the winter. We have the greenhouse at Roaring Fork High School, but it's rather challenged for winter water. It has to be kind of hauled in. So it's tricky to get that. But Glenwood Springs Elementary School, I went down to a meeting there a few months ago, and they had all the teachers after school in the cafeteria with scratch pads, big scratch pads, listing all the things they wanted the greenhouse to enable them to teach the kids. And it's like a list of 100 different, you know, things like compost and pollinators and mindfulness and Native American culture and math and forest health and flowers. I mean, on and on it goes. Having teachers like these people, this enthusiastic over the garden, gives me a lot of confidence that it'll be a great project.
So we've got some garden moms finally. And,
a lot of garden moms
and this is like
and dads.
And it's going to be a living laboratory.
Exactly.
So I love that idea. They bring in the mindfulness stuff because when you're out when it's really cold, you could go into a greenhouse and you get that the same sort of ambiance that you would have in that you're going on a walk in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
I have my tropical and Mediterranean greenhouses. You know, there's. It just takes the edge off the day. Humidity is so much warmer. And even with the overcast days, if you get 1 hour of sunshine, the greenhouse heats up substantially and it won't cool down for a long time, especially with the thermal mass and stuff. So anything you can do to have that kind of, especially in a classroom situation and having the kids there at school, then they can take advantage of that.
You are listening to Public Radio KDNK. This is the Living Permaculture Show, and we are talking about season extension structures, among other things, here with Jerome and Michael. So we can continue talking about that. Any other exciting projects you have going on out there, Michael?
There's a group of parents that have initiated a greenhouse project at the Riverview School. These things take a while, so they'll probably be building in the summer of 2020, I'm just guessing. It's really exciting to have a group of parents. They've done business plans and all kinds of background work for this, and they called me up and asked me to come meet with them, and I walked in and I'm like, whoa, you're already halfway there. But having the parents be this enthusiastic about it is amazing. It's, you know, to if we had the idea to go start the greenhouse there, we'd have to beg them to come. But when they start the process, it's really, you know, there's going to be some follow-up and that people will be involved for a long time. So that's pretty exciting. Then there's a growing dome that's going to go up at Colorado Mountain College in Steamboat this summer, because they want to have a greenhouse for their sustainable studies program. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
A lot of it's greenhouse like a, building.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's like a critical mass has suddenly been reached, and education is looking for, you know, teaching kids how to grow food so they can eat before they learn their reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Or yeah. They can eat as they're learning.
And the group from the Steamboat Springs, they came and do our, they came and for the last 3 or 4 years have leased our forest garden, our greenhouses for a day and a half, coming in June and in fall. So they actually use the greenhouses and the forest garden as a living laboratory to teach their design course that they do online, actually do through the school. So we've had a lot of long history with Steamboat Springs and some great folks there, and they have a great program.
And at the Roaring Fork High School, Growing Dome and Garden, Hadley Henschel, our great biology teacher who's been there since the beginning, 2009 actually, he and his wife Lindsay are taking their two boys for a sabbatical for a year. Going to rent an RV and drive around the country.
Wow.
So there will be some wonderful education to be had for them while they're gone. And one of the other teachers, Wendy, is going to be running the greenhouse program. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done over there to prepare everything for planting this summer. And she just told me this afternoon that she's looking for volunteers this Friday morning from 9:30 to noon. A lot of the students, the ag bio students, will be out there working. And so anyone who has some time, wants to do some gardening, this Friday from 9:30 to noon at Roaring Fork High School would be a good start.
A little birdie told me that in that greenhouse there is a lemon verbena tree.
Mm-hmm.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. However, I was just visiting that lemon verbena tree, and we have some. Yeah, I think we've lost it.
Oh no!
Yeah,
oh,
I know. Hadley was using it for all kinds of things, but there's a. We need to do some maintenance on the dome itself. There was the aircraft tape dried up and fell off right near that lemon verbena tree, and a crack, you know, in between the panes or the panels was there, and I think it just got frozen out.
It's definitely one of
right next to the exterior skin, you know.
Yeah, because it's not frost tolerant. It's one of my favorite herbs, but it's something we have to grow as an annual here outside anyway. So when I heard that, I was just very excited to go visit the big version, but I'll just have to wait. All right. So we are getting a little bit close to our time here today, but we have some announcements. So I'm going to let Jerome take it away.
Yeah. So we have our summer schedule for greenhouse workshops. We have a 2-day workshop on the June 15th and 16th, forest garden and greenhouse. And then we have our PDC permaculture design course July 15th through the 27th. And then we have an academy in August 17th through the 25th. So if you want to know any more about those programs or volunteering at Crimpy, give us a call at 970-927-4158 or 456-3480, or give us an email at jerome@crmpi.org. You can go on our website for those schedules at crmpi.org.
Great. Sustainable Settings is also having a workshop June 15th, but it is on biodynamics, just intro level to biodynamic prep making for the spring prep. So if you're interested in that, reach out to Sustainable Settings Ranch. We have just a minute or two left here, Jerome. Since we've been talking about all these great plants, and we're all very jealous of your beautiful greenhouses and all the wild things that you're growing in there, can we get a little greenhouse update? What are you guys eating out of there? What's flowering? What's happening with the pollinators?
Well, we have kale in the mono greenhouse, which is a Mediterranean greenhouse, and lots of kale and mustards, and I've been selling some to Skip's Market, and I'm trying to eat steam kale every day and take some over to Michael's. And then outside we have all the lovage and other stuff. And then we have lots of green manures planted in the tropical greenhouse to suck out some of the nitrates. And lots of different things in there, too. We don't have any tropical fruit right now. We just finished the oranges and the kumquats. But, you know, one of the big problems with these overcast days and the rain is that pollinators, indoors and outdoors, can be marginal, the pollination. Because bees have to travel a while, and if it's cold in the morning, they just don't go out. So some of our trees are full of blossoms, and we may not get what we want. We may get just what we want. We don't know yet. It's a crapshoot on these kinds of wet springs, and especially with the cold weather. But hopefully if we get 50% pollination, that'll be just fine because we won't have to thin, and right. We won't get an overabundance of small fruit. So hopefully it'll work out the way it should, and if it doesn't, we have so many different things.
Something will work out.
Yeah, we always have grapes and mulberries and all kinds of other, you know. So we have a very resilient, 150 varieties. Something will show up.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you, Michael, for being on the show with us here
Thanks
today.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So I hope everyone is enjoying the rain and the brief sunshine and getting out there in their gardens. Thanks for tuning in to Public Radio KDNK and the Living Permaculture Show. We will see you next month.